Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. When reporter Billy Baker wrote a story about how middle-aged men let their friendships fade away and how that actually hurts their health, boy, did he hit a nerve. The story went viral. He got emails from around the world, interview requests from as far as Australia. There's something there. Men know it. Their kids and wives know it. And it turns out it matters. This hour on Point, men letting friendships slide and how social isolation hurts their health. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Men, is this you? Did you wake up one day and realize you'd let your friendships slide? Women, do men need a little help to maintain friendships and make new ones? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in the studio is Billy Baker, feature writer for the Boston Globe. His story that got so much attention 2 weeks ago was headlined, "The Biggest Threat Facing Middle-Aged Men Isn't Smoking or Obesity, It's Loneliness." He wrote about himself as Exhibit A, and his follow-up piece published today is called "My 2 Weeks as America's Number One Middle-Aged Loser." You can link to both at our website, onpointradio.org. Billy Baker, thanks for coming to see us, to see me. I know you need a friend.
Yeah, let's talk about what a loser I am, Tom.
Your editor came to you, I mean, kind of out of the blue, and proposed this. And what was the proposal, and what was your reaction?
Yeah, you know, I got called to an editor's office with this idea. They had a story I'd be perfect for, and I walk in, and they say, "We want you to write about how middle-aged men have no friends." And I was offended, you know, and I spent the walk back to my desk trying to justify my way out of this assignment by going through my friends.
Meaning, like, what do you mean? I got friends.
Yeah, I'm not the kid sitting alone in the cafeteria. I think I've got friends. And then as I start just doing an inventory of my life, I started to realize how rarely I see those friends and how few, you know, genuine interactions I have with other men, which used to be the norm before I became the dad with kids and job and career and all these other things.
Well, is that the deal? I mean, why are you a recluse? What happened?
Not in the
what happened to your friends,
I mean,
Billy?
You know, I wake up, I go to the gym, I go to work, I come home from work, I eat dinner, I play with my kids, and I go to bed. And then on the weekends, that's kind of time for the children. And the guys that I'd like to hang out with, they're locked in the same prison of commitments.
And when you went through the inventory of your friends, how far back were you reaching? How few times a year do you actually see them?
I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit this on, you know, national public radio.
The headline says you're America's number one middle-aged loser, so I mean, it's okay.
You know, I think I've got one friend I see on the regular, and then the rest are, you know, it takes moving mountains to get a guy's weekend together or to get on an airplane. I mean, time, money, those are two things that are in short supply, and that's what it kind of takes when you get to this point in middle age where your friends spread out. They're all over the place, and your life becomes mostly about your children and your career, and shortchanging your friends is the logical outcome.
You went out also, though, to look at the implications of this sort of thinning of male friendship as men hit middle age, and it turns out there are consequences.
Horrifying consequences. It, you know, for me, I'm at the beginning of middle age and I'm sliding down this path, but it's a predictable path and it leads to a predictable place, which is this feeling of isolation. And when you look at the medical consequences of what that does to you, it's staggering. It will lead to an increase in all sorts of diseases. It'll dramatically increase your chances of dying. You know, these things that we're busy doing the important things, but on the list of things that will make you happy and healthy, spending time with the friends you already have is the lowest of low-hanging fruit. Yet it's so easy to just let it sit there and think it's not going to rot.
We've heard the Surgeon General of the United States, and we will talk with him a little later in this hour. This is Vivek Murthy saying, many times in recent years, as you remind us, that the most prevalent health issue in this country is not cancer or heart disease or obesity, as big as all of those are, it's isolation. But I come back to this, we don't think of middle-aged men as isolated. I mean, they're working, they got kids, they got family. Is that really isolation?
Not yet, but I think it's possible to be lonely in a crowd and to be sliding down this path where, I mean, I'll use my dad as an example. He was a great father. He had plenty of friends with the other sports dads, but now that he's an empty nester, it's my mom. He has one other good friend that, you know, he sees occasionally, but for the most part, it's work, it's home, and then it's asking if he can come see his grandkids on the weekend, you know.
And because he didn't nurture or keep up male friendships during the course of his middle age, course of his life?
Because he was playing the role of a good dad, of a responsible adult, or at least the way it's portrayed. And then what does that lead to later in life? It leads to a situation where so many things have lapsed naturally, or at least it feels naturally, and now he did nothing wrong, and yet here he is, you know, later in life, and my mom had a frank talk with him after reading my article that, you need to make some changes.
You wrote this. It rocketed around the world. You got all kinds of response. You've been writing about that just today. Tell us what.
Oh, the responses are they're from all over the world. They're from all over the place. There's a lot of people in my age demographic saying, I feel like you crawled into my head and that this is a path I am already on. And it's time to make some changes. It's time to get the fellas back together. I've also been hearing from a lot of people on the other end of middle age saying, I wish I'd read this article 25 years ago. This is exactly what happened to me. And now, you know, I've lots of widowers, divorcees saying, you know, when my partner left, I was all alone. And I didn't realize how alone I was until it was this point that they arrived at somewhat accidentally, somewhat predictably, in with noble intentions of mm-hmm. being a good employee, being a good father.
Billy Baker with the Boston Globe has written about men not keeping up their friendships, ending up kind of isolated, even within families, and the health consequences of that, all kinds of response from all over the world. We'll talk with the Surgeon General of the United States in a few minutes about how he sees this issue, but I want to get right into it right now. Billy Baker's with us in the studio, as is Dr. Richard Schwartz. He's a practicing psychiatrist, teaches psychiatry at McLean Hospital and Harvard Medical School, is co-author with his spouse of The Lonely American, Drifting Apart in the 21st Century. Dr. Richard Schwartz, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Does Billy Baker's reporting resonate with you? Are we getting a real picture here? Do we really have an issue of men in middle age? They've let their youthful friendships go and they slide into some kind of bubble of isolation?
I think he's nailed it exactly. One of the things he's nailed is that the slide into the bubble comes later. It's the preparation for the bubble that's going on in middle age.
What do you mean?
In middle age, men, like everybody, are very much held in a network of relationships by their kids, by their spouses, mm-hmm. by the people they're
soccer
working
games,
with.
Soccer games, sidelines, and
yes.
all the rest.
But it's being held there by those structures rather than having independent friendships and relationships that can be sustained once those structures disappear. Mm-hmm. When the kids go off to school, mm-hmm. when you finally retire, when those things start to come apart, then all those chickens come home to roost.
Are men doing something different than women?
Men are doing something different from women, and men are doing something different from what men used to do in generations past.
Describe that.
We sort of saw this coming in a small study that my wife and I did about 25 years ago, looking at the effect of different work arrangements on marriages where there was at least one child under five. And in every man that we talked with, he said, and this wasn't even something we were looking at. We didn't think we were interested in this. Each one said, I'm going to be more involved with my kids than my father was with me.
Mm-hmm.
And each one was intensely involved with work and earning a living and, yep. and advancing themselves. And they all said something had to give. And what gave was ever seeing their male friends. And these are the people who are now middle-aged men. And there just wasn't time to fit it all
but
in.
Women work too. Women work too. And somehow we're not talking about women not having friends. We're saying, in fact, by contrast, they seem to maintain relationships.
Women seem to be better at maintaining relationships. Women are probably better at having relationships to start with. They're partly made that way. They're partly socialized that way. In recent years, men tend to ride on their wives' coattails if they're married, and the woman in most households is the keeper of the social calendar, the one who makes connections happen, and the one who oversees it all, which is why the women are getting together wondering what to do about the lonely men.
And men kind of drifting along behind. What about the idea of real health consequences attendant to this, Dr. Schwartz?
There's been a couple of decades of research that make very clear that being socially isolated is a terrible thing for our health, and it has major consequences. We were designed as organisms to live, exist, survive in small groups, and when that starts to give way, it really hurts us.
But when and how does that show up? I mean, when you're raising kids and working and you're going to the basketball game and you're, I don't know what else, you know, you're in the neighborhood, you don't feel alone, so though you may not be cultivating your friendships, when does the rubber hit the road in terms of the health consequence showing up?
In terms of the health consequences, the rubber hits the road generally somewhat later. The Surgeon General will talk about this more probably, but the sort of bottom line is that if you look at people's degree of social connection, the more socially connected, the less lonely people are about 30% less likely to die in a 7-year period than their more connected counterparts. And that applies to both loneliness, which is a feeling, and social disconnection, which is a sort of objective measurement of how much you're connected to people.
Billy Baker, you got us thinking about this. Do you actively feel lonely, or was this kind of something in the background that you've got focused on here?
I guess I realized I felt a little sad that I was not seeing the guys.
Yeah.
It's painted, I guess I painted it as sort of frivolous to all these other important things I need to do. The realization that there are these real health consequences and I'm sliding down a predictable path has forced me to do something about it, forced me to take a good long look in the mirror. And in the article I wrote, I mentioned stealing something called Wednesday Night, just a simple Wednesday night get together for the guys. And it's amazing how many are reaching out saying, I want in. I need a Wednesday night.
Billy Baker with the Boston Globe has got us talking about social isolation, lack of friendships, and both of those as a health threat to American men. Dr. Richard Schwartz is with us as well. After the break, we'll talk with the Surgeon General of the United States, Vivek Murthy, about this. Here's Bruno Mars. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
You can count on me like 1, 2, 3. I'll be there. And I know when I need it, I can count on you like 4, 3, 2. And you'll be there. 'Cause that's what friends are supposed to do, oh yeah.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about social isolation, lack of friendships as a health threat to American men, American males. Billy Baker has written about it for the Boston Globe, and he is with us in the studio this hour. Headline, the biggest threat facing middle-aged men isn't smoking or obesity, it's loneliness. You can link to his stories at our website, onpointradio.org. Dr. Richard Schwartz is with us as well, practicing psychiatrist, co-author of The Lonely American, Drifting Apart in the 21st Century. Recent mega-hit podcast, Missing Richard Simmons, just aired its last episode yesterday. Talk about lonely guys. Here was a 2012, little bit from a 2012 interview with the fitness guru and noted recluse, Richard Simmons.
Who is the most fun person for you to hang out with?
I don't hang out with people.
You don't hang out with anybody?
No.
That's a shame, I
live
think.
A very recluse life.
I know you
this
do.
This is about the most, you know...
Hanging out you've done.
Yeah, like 4 people in a room.
That's...
I teach my class, I kiss everybody, I take hundreds of photos, and I go home.
You do.
And I socialize with no one.
Okay, that may be too much. Genuine, bona fide recluse there, Richard Simmons. But a lot of American men letting loose of friendships as they head into middle age. And the message here is that it costs them. You can join us this hour. Do you see it? Men who've drifted away from buddies, don't have time, don't really have a social life beyond the family, don't have friends. Is there something new here? Something worse than before? And why? Men, do you find it harder to make and sustain friendships as you get older? And are women just better at making and maintaining friendships? Why? Lots of response online here on Twitter. Haywood says, I'm a 48-year-old male. My friendships exist purely on Facebook. My only close contact is my fiance. Otherwise, I feel isolated. Jonah, a big part of my grandfather's life, Jonah writes to us, was the social club, a drink, a game of pinochle, a chat with friends. We've lost this. But Richard writes to us, hey, I'm pretty much okay not having a lot of friends. Billy, Dr. Schwartz, please stand by. Richard, calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, it's so different than from when my father and my grandfather, when they were around. My grandfather's joined civic organizations. My father made sure that, you know, they had guys' trips, they had guys' weekends. A lot of that is kind of socially unacceptable now. You know, if we're seen taking time away from our families, that's considered, oh, you're putting yourself before your kids. And there's a lot of pressure on us just to stay and do things at the expense of our friendships. Our friendships, I don't feel that they are valued.
But do you feel it? Do you miss it, Richard? Do you buy that it's an actual threat to your well-being?
Absolutely. I feel the isolation. I miss my friends. I ask my friends to do things, and they tell me they have the same type of obligations and problems. I've been trying with some friends to arrange, you know, just a short trip for years, and none of them can do it, and they all feel it.
We're going to talk with the Surgeon General of the United States in just a minute here. Maybe we'll get his advice on what to do about that or about social norms and roles that may leave men isolated. Richard, let us hold that. I'll get one more right here. Don in Fort Lauderdale in Florida. Don, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It's really funny because I was thinking about this exact subject as I was driving along a little while back. Without my wife, I'd be lost. And my wife sort of is the social butterfly and the leader of the social calendar. But what I really want to get to is the fact that I think men don't have an emotional language for being intimate with one another. They just can't do it. They could make small talk. They could hang out. They could BS, they could complain, they could talk about sports, but when it comes down to feeling talk, most men, I found, are lost, and I think that's a major issue. But thanks.
You mean even if they get together, maybe they're not sharing? Let me get one more, and we'll go to Vivek Murthy, Surgeon General. Mira in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mira, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have a fun anecdote. My family and I lived in Shanghai for a couple of years. We moved there for my husband's job.
Yeah.
Now, in China, the lady of the house is known as the Tai Tai. And I, as a trailing spouse, was a Tai Tai, mm-hmm. spending my days of leisure as an expat spouse visiting fabric markets and getting massages and stuff.
Yeah.
But then there was this very small percentage of trailing spouses who were men. And they were called guy ties. Well, these guy ties were the envy of all the other working men, especially my husband, because although they had school-age children, in China we all had ais, which is maids. And
yeah, yeah. Were they socializing? Were these guys socializing, Mira?
They were checking out all the bars, the restaurants, the fun places. You know, Shanghai is a very hopping nightlife, and they were doing this all the time, and they made such good friendships, and I have to say were the envy of many men, including my husband. I just wanted to share that they did bond a lot and spend a lot of time together and had a great time.
So men can do it given the circumstances, but it shouldn't surely take Billy, Dr. Schwartz, being a guy tie in Shanghai to have a social life. I want to go to Washington right now for just a minute. Dr. Vivek Murthy is with us, the Surgeon General of the United States. He's been talking a lot about social isolation and its consequences for a long time. Dr. Murthy, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, it's good to be with you, Tom.
So what do you think of this notion that middle-aged men in America let their friendship slide, and it's consequential? Does that ring true to you?
Well, it rings true not just for middle-aged men, but for populations across the board. You know, one of the things that we have come to realize is that loneliness is an underappreciated public health threat. In the 1980s, about 20% of adults said that they were lonely. Now that number stands at 40%, and I believe that's likely under a representation because many people don't report loneliness because of fear of the stigma around loneliness. So we are talking here about a subjective state. You can have dozens of friends and acquaintances and still feel lonely. But here's why this is important, because loneliness has consequences for your health. We know that loneliness is associated with shorter lifespans. In fact, the mortality impact of loneliness can be as powerful in some studies as smoking or obesity. It's also linked with increased risk of heart disease, increased risk of cognitive decline. So there are many reasons for us to be concerned about loneliness, because loneliness is toxic for our health.
So why do you think so many Americans are feeling lonely?
Well, it's a good question. You know, we know that loneliness is not new. It's been an experience that people have had for a long time, and all of us go through moments where we feel lonely. But the bottom line is that humans evolved to need each other. We evolved to be socially connected. And you can imagine why in primitive times it would be useful to have connections with others to help ensure you had a stable food supply, to ensure you had greater protection. And what that means is that when we are lonely, that actually is a stress state for our body. And as with other stress states, when acutely, in the short term, stress can be helpful, but when it's chronic, when it endures over a long period of time, it can be harmful and can increase our stress hormones like cortisol. It can increase inflammation in our body, which is connected to heart disease, cancer, and other leading causes of death.
Can you really be lonely when, let's say, we've been talking, I mean, we should put it in broader terms, not just about married guys with kids, because there's all kinds of guys. But just picture that for a minute. Can you really be lonely when you've got a spouse and you've got kids and you've got school events and soccer games and all the rest? Can a guy be lonely in the midst of that?
Absolutely. And keep in mind, we have seen loneliness go from 20% to 40% among adults at a time when we are more connected by technology than any point in the history of human civilization. And I saw this all the time as a doctor when I was practicing medicine in Boston. You know, I had one patient I will never forget who actually won the lottery. And he told me it was the worst thing that ever happened to him because after he won the lottery, he quit his job. He left all his friends at work. He moved out of his neighborhood where he had people that he had known for years, and he moved into a wealthy neighborhood where he didn't know anyone. He became isolated, and he eventually developed heart disease, diabetes, and other conditions, and it was terrible for him. But I've seen this reflected on the road as well. As Surgeon General, I see a great deal of emotional pain and isolation in our country, and that's why as I've gone around talking about the need for us to address isolation, the need for us to focus not just on physical well-being, but emotional well-being, it has been one of the topics that has resonated the most, because this is a common experience, unfortunately, for many folks.
You're the Surgeon General. Let's do a little surgery, though, on this. I mean, is this the right place for us to be putting our scalpel in here? Lottery winner problems. We've got the research out today from Ann Case and Angus Deaton saying that you've got actually life expectancy of middle-aged white people turning down in this country. They talk about deaths of despair from suicide, drugs, alcohol. Does social isolation stack up as something we should be thinking and worried about when you put it up against the economic challenges and social displacement and people who are killing themselves with OxyContin?
But that's a great question, and what it requires us to understand is that these issues are all connected, and loneliness is actually a root cause of some of the greater challenges that we're reading about every day in the news. When people are isolated, that's a state of stress. People who are isolated and who are feeling lonely often feel there's a void in their lives, and they may seek to fill that void in different ways, some of which may be healthy. They may choose to reach out to other people. They may choose to exercise. They may choose to spend more time doing things that bring them joy. But many people also, in stress states, fill the void with unhealthy things, such as drugs or alcohol or unhealthy foods. So we've all had moments like this in our own lives. But as you can imagine, when you are feeling lonely for prolonged periods of time, when you are filling that void with unhealthy things, that increases your risk for many of the chronic illnesses we care about. And it also, I believe, is contributing to the addiction crisis we are seeing all across America.
Dr. Vivek Murthy, Surgeon General of the United States, please stand by. Billy Baker with the Boston Globe. Dr. Richard Schwartz, we've got a lot of people calling in, and I want to put their calls to our, in effect, panel here. Tricia in Dayton, Ohio. Tricia, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to know something I've been studying. There are a lot of feminist scholars who have been talking about this for a while, about the isolation of masculinity and men not being able to express deep emotions and deep concerns with other men, and then getting into marriages with women where women have other friendships in their lives that they can express this to. Men only have their wives that then also take this emotional burden with them, not to shift the focus to women, but rather to say that there's this need for a deeper connection within male-to-male relationships in our society.
Tricia, let us pick it up right there. Richard Schwartz, what about the isolation of masculinity? Do those two go together like a horse and carriage?
At least for some people. Certainly men are less comfortable with feelings, with closeness, by and large. And in a lot of research on loneliness and social isolation. The bad news is that people have fewer and fewer connections. In some ways, the good news is that people are very much more connected to their spouses than they used to be, and put a lot of stress and pressure on that as the sole relationship to actually give them closeness and emotional connection.
Dr. Murthy, is there something peculiarly American about this? I mean, I was in a beer garden in Munich last year, and middle of the day, and I saw lots of guys hanging out there. Now, maybe they have a different economic structure, different work structure. A bunch of them were young middle-aged guys taking care of small children. They look like maybe they're on long paternity leave or something. But they were having a couple of beers and talking in the middle of the day, spending real time, kind of thing I don't see much in this country, certainly not that time of day. Is there something peculiarly American about this isolation problem, Dr. Murthy?
Well, while it's not uniquely American, there are other countries that are experiencing this as well, but there is something around our culture of masculinity which makes it harder for men to prioritize a social connection in their life. So going forward, what we need to do is we need to not only recognize that social connection is important for our health, but we also have to recognize that there's a larger societal context for this. We know that humans need each other to survive, and the social fabric of our communities is one of the most important safety nets that we have. When the connections between people are weak, it doesn't just impact our health, but it can impact civic engagement, our volunteerism, our ability to come together and overcome big challenges. So strengthening our connection with each other is not only good for ourselves, but it's good for our community, and it's good for our country.
That's easy to say, but why have those connections eroded? Why have they fallen apart? Is it individuals sort of falling down, or something about the way we understand and construct our society these days?
Well, I think it's a few things. Number one, I don't think we prioritize social connection enough. And because we don't prioritize it enough, in the context of some of the major stresses people have been experiencing, whether it's the economic downturn 8 or 9 years ago, or whether it's other social stresses, that can put a real strain on people's emotional well-being. But the second is technology. You know, technology is a tool that can be used for good purposes. It could be used for harmful purposes. But there are too many people, I think, who also assume that online connections are as powerful as offline connections. Because I message a friend, you know, a couple of times a year on Facebook, that's not necessarily always the same as having a in-person meaningful engagement or interaction with them. So there are several things going on that are a consequence of circumstance and technology and the economy. But this is why it's all the more important for us to recognize, especially men, but men and women, that social connection is something that we have to prioritize, something that we have to invest in. And we also have to reach out to those who are lonely and look to bring them in, because that's an important, because folks who are lonely often have a tough time reaching out and breaking out of their shell.
Dr. Vivek Murthy, Surgeon General of the United States. Dr. Murthy, thanks very much for spending a minute with us today.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you, Tom.
Billy Baker with the Boston Globe. Are you just this isolation of masculinity? Are you just too macho to have friends?
No, not at all. I think, you know, I brought this up in conversation with one of your producers before the show.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard this phrase that if you stay up late with the boys, you've got to get up with the men. And that phrase would often be uttered to me when I was misbehaving as a youth. And
wait, what does that mean?
That was the discussion. What does it mean? It kind of labels hanging out with the boys is sort of trivial when you've got these sort of male responsibilities.
Oh, I see.
And
get to work, be on top of your stuff.
Exactly. You know, and there's something about adopting that approach that says these things are frivolous. These are not the important things, that allows you to prioritize your friends out of your life. But, you know, this article has been, if anything, for me, a wake-up call where I realize these are the important things. This is as healthy for me as going to the gym and eating right.
A wake-up call to restore relations with old friends or make new ones?
I think it's both. I think that what's tricky is that someone had sent me a study after the article came out pointing out that when you ask someone who their best friend is, they invariably point to their childhood or to high school, as if it's not very cool to admit that a new friend is a best friend, or that they may be closer to you than those that you label as a best friend. I like the idea that Minnie Kaling, the comedian, has put forth, that a best friend is not a person, but it's a tier. And for me, it's about recognizing the people that are in that tier, telling them, and then making the effort to spend that time with them.
Billy Baker with the Boston Globe. Dr. Richard Schwartz, please stand by. We're talking this hour about social isolation, lack of friendships as a health threat to American males. Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton, You Can't Make Old Friends.
When somebody knocks at the door, Someone new walks in. I will smile and shake their hands, but you can't make old friends. Can't make old friends. Can't make old friends. It was me and you since way back when, but you can't.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. I'm glad you're listening to this On Point podcast. Really happy to have you here. You know, a lot of people barely know podcasts exist. They've never listened to one. Here at On Point, we want to change that. All this month, we're inviting our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. Do it in real life or on social media. And make sure you let us know what you're recommending. Tell us using the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. And thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about social isolation, lack of friendships, as a health threat to American men. Billy Baker got us thinking about it, wrote a feature piece on it for the Boston Globe. Headline, the biggest threat facing middle-aged men isn't smoking or obesity, it's loneliness. Dr. Richard Swartz is here as well, practicing psychiatrist, teaches at McLean Hospital, Harvard Medical School, co-author of The Lonely American, Drifting Apart in the 21st Century. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Men, do you find it harder to make and sustain friendships as you get older? Can you feel a void, an absence, something you need but don't have? When you look for friends, where do you find them? How? And what's your advice on making and keeping and sustaining male friendships? Tons of response here. Stephanie says, hey, not just men. As a working mother, it's hard to have a social life when I was only sleeping 5 hours just to fit in laundry. Okay, fair enough. But there's also kind of a sense out there that women are somehow better at this. Jeff says, On Point is my life story today. Lots of isolation. 8 years now working from home primarily. Right on down, Matt says, now imagine the added dimension of being a single father. Monica says, I encourage my husband to go out with friends and have his own time. This is a healthy relationship. Betsy's sort of poking us here and says, this is not unique to men. Women have all the same demands on time. We're just made differently. Dig deeper, dudes, she says.
Well, that's an interesting point. Like, I've heard a lot of responses from women saying just that. And there's something actually illuminating when you look at studies on how men interact as opposed to being different from women. There are studies that have found that women are better at keeping their long-term relationships alive over the telephone, whereas men fail at that by and large. Mm-hmm. Another is just these photo studies that show simply how men and women interact.
Women, photos, like snapshots.
Like they kind of creep up and take photos of large groups of people and study the difference. And women speak face to face, whereas men stand side by side.
Looking off.
Two guys at the bar watching the game. Two guys with their back to the bar looking out at the world together. Yeah. And that's how we're comfortable when we are going through something together. So for me anyway, when I get invited on these, let's have coffee, let's have a beer, it's not the same for me as if it's a let's go for a hike, let's go kayaking, whatever it might be, where we're going through something together. I just ran a couple marathons with a friend and our relationship was never better just because we were running side by side for all these miles. And now we're done with that project and we've barely spoken.
Dr. Swartz, what's your advice to men on either what they can learn for women or they can just learn, period, about being better at it, being more open to sustaining old friendships, creating new friendships, interacting in a way that really breaks the isolation?
I think the first thing to learn is to recognize that men do tend to have these side-by-side friendships by doing things together, by working together, by running together.
Is that bad or good or both?
That is not bad. Okay. And what it means, though, is that you have to provide regular opportunities for that happen. Mm-hmm. Because when you are doing that regularly, friendships deepen and the conversations do become deeper even if you're just sitting side by side. But it doesn't happen if you have to make each encounter into a new effort. If you put yourself out there and risk someone saying, no, I'm too busy, what, you're not too busy, if you mm-hmm. call. You want to start to build into the fabric of your life some way in which you get into contact with people that happens automatically, that that doesn't take initiative each time. I think that's the thing that can make the biggest difference.
I mean, it's interesting. Rob writes to us, 58-year-old male, always had difficulty with friendships, no kids, and my wife is frequently away from home. Loneliness equal constant. There on Twitter. And on the other hand, Larry says, I live alone and like my own company. I'm OCD. Being alone is heaven to me. Humans are so freaking needy, Larry writes to us. Okay, Joe in Boston. Joe, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I mean, I'm 33, and I feel like, you know, I'm, as even somebody approaching middle age, who's technically still a millennial, I think.
Yep.
I feel this already. I mean, I'm married. I'm in an intense graduate program at Northeastern. I have to work part-time to pay the bills. And when I come home at the end of the day, my wife's a nurse. She works nights. I want to come home, sit on the couch, drink a few beers, and be by myself. I have a few friends, but for some reason we grow distant and we're both around the same age. And I can't figure out why we can't always make that effort to say, no, instead of sitting down on the couch, we're going to go meet and hang out. Like, it's just... I feel like we're increasingly isolated.
Joe, are you just lazy? You just want to sit on the couch and have a beer? I mean, I mean it with full brotherhood, but what's it about?
I mean, that's the thing I don't get. It's like at the end of the day, you're like, you've been out, you've been doing things, you just want to come home and maybe like be alone, but I also feel lonely. So it's like, I don't know how to split that hair and what makes sense, if I should be making more of an effort. You know, even when I do make an effort, it seems like the other guys, like the stars don't align and they can't do it because they're busy too. It's like, where do you, it's increasingly more and more effort to get it done, and it sucks, but it is the way it is.
Billy, there's the report from the 33-year-old.
And what I've been hearing from him, I've been hearing from a lot of people. I've also been hearing from the people who say they've been successful at maintaining their friendships, and it's what Dr. Schwartz just brought up. It's this regularity. It's about having something on the calendar, the men's hockey league, the bowling night, Saturday morning brunch, whatever it is, as long as it's on the calendar and it's part of your regular life, it says routine is your job.
It's so interesting. Women are paying close attention to this. They're listening closely to this conversation. And Kira writes to us, I mean, I'm 48, and I worry about my husband having shelved his friendships. We're both busy with work and our child, and time for friends is thin. But I carve out time here and there, whereas he typically does not. She writes, as he ages, my husband's preference to opt out of human interaction seems to gradually increase. I worry about the consequences to his immediate and long-term happiness and wellness. I mean, that's she's really tuned in. She's paying attention. But Sarita writes to us, says, hey, this is a woman writing. This is another way we expect women to do the emotional work for men.
Perhaps.
Well, there's logistical work that I think my wife is better at that allows these things to happen. I just went away with two couples. It was a wonderful weekend, but there's a 0% chance that happened if the guys tried to organize it. It just would have died. We had to hand it off. They did a wonderful job. We had a wonderful weekend. I don't know if it's me or if it's men in general, but this seems to be a pattern I'm hearing over and over and over again. We have a tough time scheduling, keeping the schedule. But when it's on the calendar, it's a normal thing. That's when the friendships maintain. That's when they're tended.
Richard Schwartz, what happened here? There were, when I think back to, let's say, my grandfather, mm-hmm. there were simply more activities built, baked into the society. He worked as a volunteer fireman, he'd be on the township board. Farmers hung out a lot because they had to work together to get the job done. He was in the Masons. Mm-hmm. He had lots of sort of structural things in his life that took him to the company of men and nurtured his friendships. What happened to all that? Church? I didn't mention church. That's another huge one.
Yeah. That's something that that Robert Putnam has written about in the famous book Bowling Alone, the way in which the societies and associations that used to be a part of the fabric of almost everybody's life have sort of slipped away in this country, and everybody is much more working on their own. I think when you add in the, you know, the 24/7 economy, you hear all these comments from listeners about basically coming home exhausted, depleted, without the energy to engage. I think that has led people to let that slip away more and more. I agree that we are just not held in the same structures that bring us together that we used to be.
Bruce is calling from Indianapolis in Indiana. Bruce, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
How you doing, Tom? How's it going?
So well, but I'm listening carefully to this and thinking about my own circumstances, those of my friends, my family. What do you see, Bruce?
One of the things I see, Tom, is being a big problem for a lot of people. You know, it's not, the Bible says, it's not good for man to be alone. And we have so much division that's going on in this country that, you know, that divides us. We're always finding things to bicker about. And we need to find things that we where we can encourage each other, but we got to have our own purpose in life. You know, we need to know first who we are, and you know, what am I? What is my purpose here? What do I want? What do I want to leave when I die? What do I want people to say about me?
I mean, you want somebody to say something, and if you don't have friends, who's going to? Bruce, I appreciate your call. You take us right back to sort of biblical injunction to don't be alone. It's just kind of unnatural for humans, and yet, I appreciate your call from Indianapolis. Gary in Nashville. Gary, you're on.
Hey, I'm 58 years old, and I would just like to share a little bit about my personal experience. I've been very blessed to have kind of a wealth of friendship and fellowship. And remarkably, it's come because for 26 years I've been a part of recovery in AA and other addictions. And that recovery community has given me a way and a basis to connect with people in very meaningful ways, including a lot of men. And it gives us a structure to be together regularly, but it also has helped me learn how to be a friend and to be willing to be open and vulnerable. And it's kind of a remarkable thing. And if somebody had told me 26 years ago when I got to recovery that this would be a fringe benefit, would have been delighted to know that. It's a very real and meaningful part of my life, and I just thought I'd put it out there.
Gary, I appreciate that very much. That is interesting. AA, as it's a social structure that goes on when so many have fallen away. And for Gary, friendships form that people really talk there, I guess. They share.
They certainly do. And my wife and I long ago wrote a sentence that probably isn't entirely true, but it was, alcoholics are the only group in this country that need never be alone because of AA. And it really is a wonderful
thing. And it's a regularly scheduled thing. You go again and again. You get to know people who are there.
And you get to call someone whenever you actually need help.
Billy, is that what it's going to take?
I've received an extraordinary number of responses from people in AA, and they told me it's circulating in their community, if only to say, thankfully, we don't have this problem.
Good for them. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina, and Haney. Haney, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I had a really good point that I feel like no one's mentioned before is, as a first-generation American, me and my friends who are from the Middle East, you know, we have an open-door policy. We hang out with each other every day. We don't even call each other. We just walk in. We expect each other to see each other every day. Versus my American friends, I have to make an appointment. I have to, you know, have to schedule something a week in advance. And, you know, if I probably went and knocked on their door, they'd be surprised.
Weirded out.
Yeah. Back in the day, like during the Dick Van Dyke times, the door was always open. They expected people to knock on the door. Now it's more of a scared of his thing.
And do you see, Haney, with fellow, I don't know, first-generation Americans of, let's say, Middle Eastern descent, if that's how you're framing it, do you see a different degree of socialization? Do they hang out more? Are their friendships more robust?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, me and my friends, I mean, there's a handful of us here in Charlotte that we, I mean, it's a normal thing for us to hang out on almost a daily basis. And if we don't hang out on a daily basis, we're at least communicating with each other to say, hey, you know, we're all busy today. What about tomorrow? Let's make sure we hang out tomorrow. And it's much more, it's a deeper relationship, I've noticed.
Bingo. There's the advantage of immigration right there. The old countries can inform us when we get kind of off the rails here. I mean, Billy, think about it, though. These days in the United States, if even a friend just shows up, you know, knock, knock, knock on the door, or don't even doesn't even not just walks in. A lot, I think a lot of American guys be like, "What? You know, I'm playing. I don't know, some conquer the world game here. I don't have time, or I don't know.
I mean, I would love it, but I can't speak for every guy.
But it's not the way things generally work.
I mean,
right?
there's all these. I mean, we're getting into these big topics of masculinity and culture and the differences between now and then. And it's all tricky to figure out. We all have our own personal story. And I mean, it was nice to be a catalyst for this discussion. Yep. But I'm realizing that everyone brings their own thing to the table, yet the symptoms are all the same and the path leads to the same place. So if anything, I'm glad I raised my hand, said I feel like a little bit of a loser at this point mm-hmm. in my life and I'm ready to make changes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that easy. It's recognizing it. And, I mean, how hard is it to hang out with the fellas?
I don't know. You've got to, Dr. Schwartz, you've got to value it. You've got to be open to it.
Got to value it, be open to it. And the people who you're reaching out to also have to. A friend of ours said some time ago that, in terms of dropping by, that long ago, being a good neighbor meant knocking on the door and saying hello. Now, being a good neighbor, it means not bothering anybody.
There's a long-term investment here, though. If you don't make these ongoing investments, Billy, in middle age and friendships, you mentioned your father earlier. I mean, someday you're not going to be middle age. People move and drift apart and everything else, and you can end up really alone.
Well, let me ask you. We discussed this a little earlier. I mean, we've got three guys sitting around breaking it down emotionally, not really our thing. I mean, what is your friend's situation? Where do you fit in this conversation?
I think about it. You know, I still have friends from high school. I still have friends from college. I'm visiting buddies this weekend, which I'm very happy about. I don't know. Life is busy. I don't feel deprived, but your piece made me think, well, is it active enough? You know, I try to keep in touch and do, but should it? Could it be more? I'm sure a lot of people will wrestle with that question a little bit. Robert in New Haven, our time is short, Robert, but I appreciate your call. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom and guests. Thank you. For me, it's all about laughter and the points people are making about regular social connection. I think that really hearty, deep belly laughter is such good medicine, and I don't think it can be achieved with people that you don't kind of have a regular familiarity with.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work retail with a group of people, men and women. We had low turnover, so we got to know each other and become very comfortable with each other. And on a daily basis, we would feed off of each other's laughter. We could, you know, attain tears of laughter. And there's nothing like that feeling when you're done or going through and being done with a situation of laughter. It is the best medicine, you know. That's kind of the bottom line for me. And I don't have it as much in my life anymore. And I want to find some regular people to get to know and hang out with and just find that laughter again and forget LOL, you know?
Yeah, more than LOL. Robert, I'm so glad you raised that. I mean, to share that laughter, you kind of have to share a narrative or a story. That means that is friendship. Then you see the absurdity of life, but you see it together, and that's a time to laugh. Sounds like a pretty good measure to me. Robert, I really appreciate your call from New Haven, Connecticut. Dr. Richard Schwartz, co-author of The Lonely American, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
My pleasure.
And Billy Baker, feature writer for the Boston Globe. Link to his pieces at our website, onpointradio.org. Billy, get out there.
I know.
Get out there with the guys. I will too. Thanks a lot for putting all this in front of us.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.